topic about Samba locking distributed file systems is a topic of active research, especially distributed file systems. A lot of companies are working in that direction, a lot of open source projects. I think we will hear a lot of interesting stuff in the next talk.
Okay, good afternoon, folks. My name is Richard Sharp, and I work for Panasis, and what I wanted to talk about briefly this afternoon is a little bit about our experiences in using Samba and in getting locking working on a distributed file system that supports NFS and SIFS, as well as our own DirectFlow file access protocol. And in doing that, what I'm like to present a very brief overview of a Panasis storage cluster, our storage architecture, because some of the information there is relevant to the problems that we faced. Then I'll talk a little bit about the distributed file system, mostly focusing on the problems that we face. Then have a look at the Lock Manager implementation, how our Lock Manager works, and then have a look at how we have modified Samba slightly to work within that environment. And then finally, try and talk a little bit about the future performance enhancements that we are going to implement to try and get more performance out of the implementation that we currently have. Okay, so Panasis is in the business of selling a storage cluster appliance. Well, I guess we try to keep the word appliance out of our product catalogs now, because appliance implies that it's something you put on the floor and power on and it just works. And what we're finding in the Linux cluster market space, and with a product like ours, it's it takes a little bit of effort to make sure that things function all the time. But often those things are called bugs. But in any case, what we have is a storage architecture which allows us to provide high bandwidth in a Linux cluster environment, and by high bandwidth we've measured it at Los Alamos at around 10 gigabytes a second to a Linux cluster, and we've also been responsible for providing higher bandwidth than that to other customers. The way in which our storage environment is put together is that it provides direct parallel storage access for those clients that have our special file system driver, but it also provides NFS and SIFS access for other clients as well. And it's built by taking 4 U-High shelves with a bunch of storage blades in them and adding them piece by piece to form a very large storage cluster. And there are a bunch of other things that you can do, like dynamically add storage blades and so on. But the basic unit of storage is a single 4U shelf with up to 11 blades in that shelf. Those blades can consist of metadata servers, or what we will sometimes call director blades, and metadata servers are the things where SIFS and NFS run, and which also implement file access functions like opening files and checking permissions and things of that nature. And there also can be, and there usually would be, a bunch of storage blades in one of these shelves, and storage blades can have anywhere from about 320 gigabytes in them to a terabyte later on this year. And you would plug all of these into the shelf to give you a certain amount of space. In addition, there can be 1 to 2 16-port GigE connectors in there, and a couple of power supplies, as well as a battery backed-up module. So that's what the hardware looks like, and a lot of our customers will build these multiple shelf systems with 1 or 2 metadata servers per shelf. And when they have their final storage network or storage system, storage cluster up and running, it's going to look a little bit like this. There's going to be a bunch of storage devices sitting out there, And there's going to be a bunch of metadata servers in there as well. Now, each of these machines, the storage devices and the metadata servers, run their own operating system. They run a version of FreeBSD. But the thing that I'm particularly interested in looking at here is the metadata servers. We run a number of services on each of the metadata servers, and they have to be able to cooperate with each other. So we run Samba on each of the metadata servers, and we run a thread that we called the file manager that runs on each of the metadata servers as well. And the file manager essentially hosts a portion of the distributed file system and provides services like checking permissions, checking that you're allowed to access a file when you go to access it, and a few other bits and pieces of information. And we run a lock manager on each of the metadata servers as well. And that lock manager is responsible for managing locks for that portion of the file system that the file manager on that metadata server manages as well. And portions of what we've done of our code sit in the kernel, sit down below inside, sit in this portion here, which is in the kernel, and that simplifies our job a little bit, because it means that we don't have to clutter Samba up with a whole lot of code that does RPCs or things of that nature, which helps us when we pull in a new version of Samba, because we're trying to pull in new versions of Samba fairly closely as they are released. So our lock manager changes and our locking changes have to fit within that environment. Now, we use... Within the system, we use RPCs, our own RPC system, for communicating between the various threads and the various entities that we use for managing the file system and managing the lock manager. However, from Samba, to gain access to locking, we use standard system calls. In fact, we've got a bunch of ioctls implemented, which allow us to implement, to provide access to the locking calls. And those are converted within the file system client into RPCs. Okay. Now, I've mentioned a number of these things, but I'll go over some of them again. So there's a separate thread running on each metadata server to do locking, and that's the thread that says LM in this diagram on the right over there. That's the lock manager, and it implements locking, and it communicates through a kernel RPC layer using RPCs. In addition, as I mentioned before, Samba is running on each of the metadata servers, and LockD will be running on each of the metadata servers as well to provide NLM functions, NFS lock manager functions. And both Samba and LockD communicate with the lock manager via ioctls, which call down into the operating system, go down through the VFS layer and get into our file system client. And our file system client does a bunch of things in there and then eventually turns those operations into RPCs. And some of the reasons, a couple of the reasons that we've implemented it this way, one particular reason is that it allows us to simplify the way in which our changes to Samba are built, and makes it easier to pull in new versions. Another is that we don't have to clutter up Samba with lots of our RPC code and deal with those sorts of things. To handle the fact that there are two different types of locking, POSIX locking and SIFS locking, the ioctls, because it's the same ioctl that's used from both LockD and from SMBD, the data structures that are passed down have flags to indicate whether or not the caller is requesting a POSIX lock or is requesting a SIFS lock. And then the differences between POSIX locks and SIFS locks, the fact that POSIX locks use splitting and recombining of locks when you have locks overlaying and other locks by one particular user, whilst SIFS locks are stacking, all of that functionality is handled within the lock manager itself. Although there is an additional wrinkle that we have inside the PANFS client that I'll mention a little bit later that has to do with recovery. What happens when, you say, the LM dies on you and you have to try and recover all the locks that were outstanding. So because the whole process of developing a multi-protocol lock manager implementation is fairly complex, we implemented this in a bunch of phases. Initially, we implemented a share mode lock manager. So initially, the lock manager implemented share mode locks, and we modified Samba in all the places where it was doing share mode lock arbitration to have it call the appropriate locking ioctals. And in that first implementation, we didn't have support for oplocks. And one of the problems, one of the immediate problems, now the reason that you need, if you have Samba running on multiple servers, shall we say, within this cluster, you can, if you're going to support oplocks, then you need to do it in a fashion where all of the nodes that are running Samba are aware of the fact that you've handed out an oplock. Otherwise, it can lead to corruption in your file system as multiple clients decide that they have oplocks and are now independently caching perhaps the same file. So our first attempt at handling this was to actually switch off oplocks and not implement oplocks at all. But we also didn't have byte range locking implemented either. And we ran into a problem immediately because Microsoft Windows, or Microsoft Office rather, when Microsoft Office goes to open a file, it wants to take out a bunch of byte range locks on that file. And Excel does the same sort of thing. And through a bit of experimentation, we discovered that you could deny access to byte range locks as long as you allowed oplocks. Word and Excel would continue to work. And from our perspective, it was quicker to add oplock support into what we already had and get that working than it was to implement byte range locks in a distributed fashion. And since we had a customer who was in need of some of this functionality, it was easier to throw together something that implemented oplock support than it was to say, well, no, you can't have this for a long while yet. So what we did then quickly was to add oplock support into the already share mode locking stuff that we had. It was actually a kludged up version of oplocks in the sense that it only supported it only allowed one client to have any oplock at all, so it didn't have level 2 oplocks, and it handled oplock breaks, self-breaks, locally on the SMBD. And after a fair bit of testing and other stuff, we finally shipped that version of the product. Unfortunately, after all the testing, we discovered that there were other applications, apart from applications like Microsoft Project, that still wouldn't work with the kludged up implementation of oplocks that we implemented. So eventually we had to get around to implementing byte range locks. So I think I've mentioned all of these things. So the next step that we took was to implement byte range locking as well within our lock manager, and then to add the support to Samba to handle these byte range locks. While the underlying stuff, adding it to our lock manager and adding it to the kernel file system client, was relatively easy. It also turns out that adding it to Samba was relatively easy as well. And essentially all we had to do was two things. We had to add calls to the ioctals in all of the places in Samba in reply.c, essentially, that handle locking and X requests and the other couple of locking cases. But we also had to add, around all read and write requests, we had to add additional locking primitives to ensure that read or write requests were handled correctly in the way that Windows wants them handled. And of course, we added LockD support so that we could have NFS locking working against this implementation as well. And the lock internally, our lock implementation, the code within, because our code has to run on both FreeBSD and on Linux, our in-kernel locking code had to be implemented in a fashion where there was a kernel portion of it, a kernel-specific portion, and then a common code portion. And this allowed us to easily port it to multiple systems. And that's because, as I mentioned in the top half of the slide here, that it supports both direct flow and our gateway client, and our gateway client has to support SIFS and NFS. Now, one of the big problems that we worked on for quite some time, and we looked a lot at what NetApp does with their multi-protocol locking implementation, one of the problems was to ensure that locking between NFS and SIFS worked correctly. And in the end, we implemented four types of locks. We implemented SIFS and POSIX byte range locks within our lock manager. We implemented a special class of locks called read-write locks, which are used to ensure that read operations by one client against a file are locked against, read or write operations on a file are locked against another client that hasn't taken any locks out against the file. And we implemented share mode locks. And the normal SIFS stacking and POSIX splitting and joining are handled correctly within our lock manager. And the read-write locks are used to take out... And it's handled in a fashion where exclusive locks of either type prevent any other locks. So if a POSIX lock request, an exclusive POSIX lock request comes in, is already on a file, and a SIFS client asks for a read lock, a shared mode lock, or an exclusive lock, then that's going to be rejected. And similarly, if a SIFS client has an exclusive lock on a file and a POSIX lock, either a read or a write lock request comes in, that's going to be rejected as well. While read locks on a file of either type, of either POSIX or SIFS type, will prevent other exclusive locks, but they won't prevent read locks being applied from other clients. And as I mentioned briefly a little while ago, we implement mandatory locking of reads and writes by surrounding all reads and writes with a lock request for the portion of the data that's being read or written, and then after we've done the read or write, after we've supplied the data, we unlock that region, and that prevents other people from corrupting what's going on while that reader or writer may be trying to access the file. And this looks a bit like what's shown in this diagram here. When a read request comes in from a client, the first thing we do is do a RW lock against that region to the lock manager. Then the next thing we do is the file system operation that's been asked for, read or a write. And lastly, we do an unlock operation. Now, unfortunately, that impacts performance because it means that we're adding two additional round trips to the lock manager for every read or write. And so a little bit later on, I'll have some slides, or maybe in the next few slides, talking about how we're going to mitigate that. Okay. One thing we haven't done so far is we haven't added code into the NFS portion of our file serving to have NFS reads and writes respect op locks. Respect all types of locks, in fact. We take the view that from the NFS side, everything is advisory, and if the NFS client goes ahead and accesses the file without looking at locks, then that's their issue, of course. There is still one potential problem that SIFS customers or SIFS users can face, and that is a SIFS user may have a file locked or may be doing a read or a write operation against a file, and an NFS user can come in and write that file and overwrite the data that the SIFS user just wrote there or mess things up, corrupt things. And for the moment, our view is that it's fairly rare amongst the customers that we're seeing that they have NFS users and SIFS users who want to access the same file, and so we don't think that's a big problem. Although in the future, we'll probably do what NetApp does, and that is that NetApp controls access to when there are locks on a file, when there are SIFS locks on a file. NFS writes have to be fairly carefully applied. In particular, if you've got, say, a share mode lock on a file which denies write, then an NFS write, I believe, will fail on that file. We're currently not doing that. But POSIX locks interoperate with SIFS locks and vice versa. Another small issue, at least, is that POSIX locks ignore SIFS RW locks. And so that means that if a SIFS client has an RW lock on a file, then a POSIX lock that comes in can actually be applied as well, regardless of what type of lock it is. But again, we feel that, and that's been done for performance reasons, and we feel that because it's unlikely that SIFS and NFS users will be accessing the same files, we don't think there'll be too many problems there. But SIFS locks do respect these RW locks that we've applied to surround read and write operations. Now, okay, let me move on fairly quickly because we're running out of time here. One of the issues that we had to work with fairly carefully was recovery. And because we have multiple metadata servers, potentially have multiple metadata servers and multiple points of failure within this environment, we had to fairly carefully determine when and how recovery would occur. And we did a few things differently between NFS and SIFS. So if the lock manager fails, if a lock manager crashes, and it might crash because of a software problem in the lock manager, or it might crash because the metadata server has crashed, but when the lock manager crashes, when it comes up, it implements a grace period during which it will not accept any lock requests except for lock replay requests that come in. And it does this because all operating system, all file system clients that are supporting locks implement a lock refresh mechanism where after a period of time they have to refresh all outstanding locks. And the grace period is something like 2 times or 3 times as long as the refresh period, so that we can ensure that all of the clients out there have discovered that a lock manager has failed. So if during the grace period, if a file system client sends in a refresh, a lock manager refresh, it will get back a message saying, I'm sorry, but I've just recovered and you need to replay your locks. And then we replay the locks in bulk during that period and everything works again. Now, we've only implemented a lock replay for NFS. We haven't implemented a lock replay for SIFS. Because for SIFS, what we do is we kill all the SMBDs when the lock manager goes down and allow things to recover that way and have the clients do their form of recovery. Okay. So, something else that we did in terms of implementing this in Samba, we piggybacked on top of the existing mechanisms that Samba already has. So instead of replacing in total Samba's byte range locking database and mechanisms, we took the approach that the first thing that Samba does is check its local TDB, and if there is a conflicting lock, it can reject the lock request immediately there. If there are no conflicting locks, then it sends the request to the lock manager. And when it gets a response back saying that the lock has been granted, it also sticks that information in the TDB to ensure that any future requests can be handled correctly. And it handles that. It does that by sending a request to sending an ioctl down into our file system client. And as a result, we've managed, I think, to minimize the number of changes to Samba to implement this particular function. Future performance improvements. As I mentioned before, for read and write operations, all read and write operations cause two round trips to the lock manager in order to do the locking that's required. Now, we've done some measurement, and in the case where the lock manager is on the same node as the SMBD, that is where it's accessing files that are on the same file system that's being served by that metadata server, and therefore the lock manager is on the same node as the SMBD, we see something like a 25 to 30% performance degradation for the SIFS IO zone tests, so running IO zone over SIFS. We're not sure what the degradation is where the lock manager is on a different metadata server, because in the case where it's on the same metadata server, it's essentially a shared memory transport to the lock manager, whereas for a different metadata server, it's got to go via TCP out to the other metadata server, and we haven't done a bunch of measurements there to figure out what the problem is. But in future, what we're going to do is to change the lock manager to implement things called lock delegations, where once you ask for a lock, initially it'll be once you ask for a read-write lock, if no other client has a read-write lock or any form of lock on that file, then the requesting client will be given a delegation which says that it can now handle all requests locally inside the file system client, and that will speed operations up a large amount because we won't have to have round trips to the lock manager. However, as soon as some other client goes and opens the file, and as soon as another client requests a lock on that file, then that delegation will be recalled. We'll send a callback to the client saying you can't have those locks anymore, and from that point on they'll all have to be flushed to the lock manager. And we expect to get, by doing that, we expect to get most of that 25 to 30% performance degradation back. And in further on down the road, we also want to do further performance enhancements which allow us to implement more lock requests locally when certain conditions apply. Now, we don't have exact figures on what our current number of locks per seconds that we support, but we believe that it's somewhere in the several thousand per second. But we will use our file system's callback facility so that if the local file system client is the only client accessing a file, it'll have a callback which allows it to do metadata updates and other things without having to, by holding that information in its local cache. Under those circumstances, we should also be able to arbitrate all locks locally without having to send them to the lock manager, and only when another client tries to take out a lock on that file will we then be forced to push all of our locking requests out. Okay, now I think that's the last of my slides. And I think I run out of time as well. So are there any questions? So that gives you an idea of how we are implementing a multi-protocol locking facility with Samba that supports both NFS. It supports our DirectFlow client, which I haven't talked about all that much, but it also supports NFS and Samba, or NFS and SIFS. If there are any questions, then I'm happy to entertain them at the moment. Otherwise, we can go on to the next speaker.
Okay, thanks a lot. We still have one talk before our conference party. Volker Lendecke, which I don't have.